The following podcast will contain spoilers and explicit language. Hello and welcome to episode 107 of...
Yeah, it's that bad.
My name is Joel.
I'm Martin.
And I'm Kevin.
This is a show that looks at supposedly bad movies and asks the question, is it really that bad? And what that boils down to is that we look at movies that are rotten on Rotten Tomatoes and we reevaluate that score. Does it really deserve to be that low? Tonight's movie is 1999's The 13th Warrior. Directed by John McTiernan, starring Antonio Banderas, Diane Venora, Dennis Storhol, Vladimir Kulik, and Omar Sharif. The 13th Warrior is a 1999 American historical fiction action film. It is based on the novel Eaters of the Dead by Michael Crichton. This film currently holds a 33% on Rotten Tomatoes. How about a plot synopsis?
Arab courtier Ahmad Ibn Fadlan is sent to the barbaric north as an emissary because he fell in love in 1922, this usually meant goodbye forever. Shortly after the party ran into exploring Vikings and befriending them, a young boy reaches the camp to call the warriors home. That's not what? That's not true. The Wendel, creatures of the mist, have started attacking their homeland, killing and eating everyone in their way. The Oracle forces a 13th warrior to accompany the Vikings, but this must not be a man from the north. Ahmad Ibn Fadlan, who quickly is nicknamed Ebon, first does not feel comfortable with the strange men of the north, but when he finds out that the Wendel really exist, he bravely fights alongside the Vikings in a battle that can't be won.
Okay, The 13th Warrior. Tonight's movie was sponsored by Caitlin. Caitlin writes in and says, for this episode, I'd like for you guys to do The 13th Warrior. It currently has a rating of 33% on Rotten Tomatoes, but it is not nearly that bad. The movie stars Antonio Banderas as an exiled Arabian who makes friends with some Vikings. I feel the movie is very entertaining and doesn't get a fair shake. I particularly enjoyed the scene where they show Antonio's character learning the Viking language. I hope you guys enjoy it as much as I do, and can come to the conclusion that no, it's not that bad. Okay, guys, The 13th Warrior. What is your history with this?
I read the book Eaters of the Dead, I think, when I was in eighth grade, maybe freshman in high school. I really liked it. I mean, I like a lot of Michael Crichton books. I like Jurassic Park. I was excited that I remember seeing the preview for this movie and knowing that it was an adaptation of the book and being excited about it. And then when I finally saw it, it did not live up to my expectations of the book. But I didn't hate it. I didn't love it, though. But maybe this time around, changed my mind.
I've never seen this movie before. I think I knew it existed, but I had no idea what it was about or anything. I was going into this blind.
As for me, in English class in high school, when we were doing Beowulf, the teacher made us watch this because there's many parallels to the Beowulf story. What do you think about that, Kevin?
I don't really see them all that much.
Yeah, they're both like Nordic, I guess.
Yeah.
That's about it.
Okay, who was that?
Who taught me that?
Yeah.
I won't dare say. But yeah, Kevin, I want you to keep those opinions.
Sounds just like an excuse to watch this movie in class.
Yeah. Our teachers frequently look for an excuse to just put a movie on and not have to teach. I don't blame them. I'd do the same thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Kevin, the original book this is based on is based on Beowulf, verbatim. What say you?
It's completely different. There's no naked Angelina Jolie in this movie.
That's a really good point. Okay, let's do what we always do at the top of the show. We'll discuss the actors one by one and we'll see how you thought they did. Oh, yeah, discuss the actors one by one. There's pretty much only one person here we're talking about.
Everyone else kind of just blended together.
Yep. Antonio Banderas.
I like Antonio Banderas. He's a great actor.
Are you sure about that? Great actor.
I don't know. I don't know. What are you doing?
He's an all right actor.
I'm more comfortable.
I can live that.
Okay.
What are you judging his awesome performance from, like Spy Kids?
No, Shrek.
I didn't particularly care for this character he's playing in this movie. Like
his character is just a proxy for the viewer.
His tone of voice and... I don't know. Did he sound weird to you in this?
He didn't sound like he was...
He didn't sound Persian to me.
Yeah, I didn't get Middle Eastern from Antonio in this movie.
I got Spanish, like maybe from Barcelona or something.
Yeah.
I didn't get...
Arabian?
Yeah, I did not get Persian, you know.
No.
I did not get Prince of Persia.
He didn't sell me on the way he sounded or the way he looked.
Not impressed?
I was unimpressed.
Yeah, me neither. I wasn't blown away by this guy.
But I think that's just bad choice for the role.
At the time, was he a hot ticket item?
He was Zorro.
He was Zorro, he Assassins was... with Stallone.
He was all right. I mean, he probably
Desperado.
Wasn't, he probably wasn't first choice, I don't think.
Yeah, probably not.
All right, anyway, yeah, so the only guy worth talking about, and he wasn't really that great. Nobody else in this movie was that great either.
I thought the different Viking guys were pretty good.
They're okay, but...
I thought they were pretty good, but they were not... You didn't spend enough time with any of them to even... I don't know what any of their names were.
One of them was Beowulf. Beowulf.
His name was not Beowulf.
Yes, it was.
He was like...
It was like Beowulf, spelled differently. Okay, that's pretty much it. Let's get into the brief history of The 13th Warrior. Originally titled Eaters of the Dead, production began in the summer of 1997, but the film went through several re-edits after test audiences did not react well to the initial cut. Michael Crichton took over as director himself due to the poor test audience reception, causing the release date to be pushed back over a year. The title was changed to The 13th Warrior. The budget, which was originally around $85 million, reportedly soared to $100 million before principal photography wrapped. Graeme Revell had composed a complete original score when the movie was slated to be released as Eaters of the Dead in 1998. But after the film was deemed unwatchable during test screenings, Michael Crichton took over the project and rejected Revell's original score and brought in Jerry Goldsmith to rescore the film. In accordance with the book, John McTiernan's version of the Wendell's mother was an old woman, which was filmed with veteran actress Susan Willis. When Michael Crichton took over and did reshoots, it was decided that brutally killing off an old lady did not reflect very well on the heroes. Crichton decided after the fact to make her younger, sleeker, and tougher. Isn't that weird? Like, he wrote it in the first place to be that way.
He did, but it works better in the book than it did in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty good for him to recognize and, you know...
The limits of the medium he's working in.
Yeah, accept the fact that something needs to be changed for it to be better in a movie.
In the final released film, Wendell's mother is played by actress Kristen Cloak, uncredited. But the final credit still lists Susan Willis as the Wendell's mother, although she is nowhere to be seen in the final cut. In John McTiernan's original cut, there was no final duel between Bullywiff and the leader of the Wendell. With all of the reshoots and promotional expenses, total cost of the film was rumored to be around $160 million, which, given its lackluster box office performance, earning how much worldwide?
I'm going to say $85
million. I'm going to say $60.
Martin wins $61 million worldwide, made for a loss of nearly $100 million.
Ouch.
The film debuted at number 2 on its opening weekend behind The Sixth Sense. Ooh.
That's tough competition.
That's not
there.
Good. The outcome of the film's production disappointed Omar Sharif so much that he retired from film acting. He did not take a role in a major film until 2003's Monsieur Ibrahim. Omar Sharif was quoted saying, "After my small role in The 13th Warrior, I said to myself, let us stop this nonsense, these meal tickets that we do because it pays well. I thought, unless I find a stupendous film that I love and that makes me want to leave home to do it, I will stop. Bad pictures are very humiliating. I was very sick. It is terrifying to have to do the dialogue from bad scripts, to face a director who does not know what he is doing in a film so bad that it is not even worth exploring." Well, Omar, we're here to do the work you're not worthy to do. Okay, The 13th Warrior. So this movie starts off in, yes, that bad fashion, with opening narration. Not bad, eh?
Yeah, great.
I mean, last week we had opening text, but no narration. This time.
This time.
So we cut the, you know, meet you in the middle here.
Okay, so we're given the backstory of Antonio Banderas.
Which is essentially the backstory of The Mummy, right? It's like the same year.
Is it? They were just explaining why he got exiled, right?
Yeah, but it was for fooling around with the head honcho's woman.
Or like, one
and at the same place.
So this guy is a poet. He's a poet laureate. You know, he's trying to diddle some lady's fiddle, who is the property of like a really powerful man in the city. And he's like, "Hey, you know, Sharif or whatever the leader is, Sultan, whatever." He's like,
"What? Listen to this guy,
Ayatollah."
Okay, so he goes up to
Khomeini.
I can sound as ignorant as possible. He goes up to Ayatollah Khomeini and he says, "Hey, this guy's messing around my woman. I want him out. He's my favorite poet, so he can be the ambassador to some Norse country. Send him out."
The men of the North.
Yeah, so they show us this stupid map.
You know, it turns out that this was a real person, the guy Antonio was playing.
Really?
He was based on a real person who actually did, he actually was an ambassador to these far off lands.
Wow, I'm glad you know that, because the whole time I was like, did this even happen? Did they have ambassadors back then?
Yeah, they did.
Supposedly he was a real person, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
They had ambassadors. The Persian Empire was extremely powerful.
You wouldn't have your Ottoman to put your feet on top of.
That's a really good
point.
Was it
for them? Or was it the Turkish Empire?
No.
I'm so glad
it
was
the Ottoman Empire.
It's the Ottoman Empire, you ass.
I'm so glad I went to college. I got a lot out of it.
So this guy's journeying to, what is this, like Norway?
Greenland, Iceland?
I have no idea.
Somewhere north.
I have no...
Greenland's...
I'm completely off the map here. I don't know where we are. I don't know where these guys come from.
Okay, so he's somewhere in Northern Europe.
Right?
Yeah, right?
Sure.
All right, so our boy Antonio Banderas, he's hanging out with Omar Sharif. They go to a Viking camp, I guess.
Well, they kind of like run into it.
Yeah, they just stumble upon these guys.
There was like another group of guys that were going to attack them?
The Tartars.
So they ran away. They scurried down to
the river. They're known for their sauce.
Luckily, there's some Vikings there that they ran into.
All this begs the question. These, I guess, caravanning groups of people that were wandering around these lands, when they interacted with each other, did they just automatically kill each other? Is that just how it works?
I'd imagine so.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, yours is mine.
And mine is yours. Wait, no. No. Well,
did you guys just get married?
Okay, so then whenever you travel, you would just have to travel with like 40 people that were just heavily armed, no matter what, no matter where you went.
I would assume so.
You're guaranteed to die if you leave home.
He essentially got like sentenced to death.
But that was the point, right?
Yeah, that is the point.
They get introduced to these different Viking characters, and we get introduced to who is going to be the 13 warriors. It's this guy who's like a king and 12 other people.
Yeah, the old king has died and the new king has taken his place. Antonio Banderas shows up and he wants to become an ambassador to these people. The original guy was sent out to convert the Vikings to Islam. I don't think that's happening with this crew.
Definitely not.
Yeah, that probably wouldn't work out so well, huh?
You know, all things considered, these were probably the most polite Vikings I've ever seen in a film.
They were very friendly.
Yeah, I feel like Vikings are not that.
There was no rape or pillaging.
That's a really point.
Anywhere to be found in this film.
And they had like a ton of honor.
Something was unsettling with me during this whole time. That's probably what it was.
Yeah. You're itching for it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, every other movie we've watched for this podcast had rape in some capacity.
And the one with Vikings doesn't? They were kind of like a superhero team.
Yeah.
I dare say a ragtag team.
There's no ragtag about it, though. They weren't, like, haphazardly assembled. They were assembled by, like, divine will, which is, like, the opposite of ragtag.
All right, yeah, so they're just a bunch of do-gooders.
Yeah, they're all hanging around, and then all of a sudden, a small boy appears from the mist.
This is the part of the movie that I was like, okay, yeah, it's that bad movie. This kid might get naked. Didn't happen.
The little kid, he's like, hey, I was sent here by King Hrothgar, aka the king from Beowulf, Kevin.
You say this like I remember any of this stuff.
Put down the Nintendo.
I saw Beowulf once and put it out of my mind. That movie sucked.
I was there. I was with you.
Yeah, and it sucked. We all agreed. We walked out of that and we said that movie sucked.
You guys all read Beowulf in high school, though, right?
I didn't read it.
I did.
I didn't. I was too busy playing Nintendo.
All right, well, the boy's like, hey, we need help. There's these freaking demon things that are killing us.
Yeah, please help. Yeah, and so they're like, okay, let's do it. Let's go. In a scene that I can only describe as Willow-esque.
Oh, yeah.
They're all in the hall and this decrepit old woman comes out. She rolls some bones and she says, the prophecy foretells that 13 warriors have to go out and fight the monsters. So they're picking up the guys one by one. The ragtag team is assembled. And when it gets to the 13th, she says, oh, the 13th man cannot be from the north. AKA, there's only one guy here that's not from the north. And it's our boy, Antonio Banderas. Now, Antonio decides to go with these guys without a moment's hesitation.
You don't argue with an oracle.
Yeah, that's a bad move.
What about Oracle the company?
Don't argue with them either.
No.
All right, so let's just point out something real quick. Antonio can't speak any of their language, and they're all speaking something.
For the first, I would say, like 15 minutes or so, whenever the Vikings would speak, they would speak in their own language, which was then sent to another Viking who could speak in Greek, who would then speak in Greek to Omar Sharif, who would then translate the Greek to Arabic.
No, to English.
AKA
It was supposed to be Arabic, though.
To Antonio Banderas, right? So there's all these
different
layers.
Why was Antonio speaking English?
To Antonio Banderas, who spoke fluent Spanish, so...
Because we, the viewers, are all Arabian. What?
Really?
What's the problem?
Really? If you're gonna have everyone else speak in a language and have it be translated, just make it subtitled then.
The whole time?
Especially if after 20 minutes, you're gonna throw that all out the window and everyone's gonna speak English the rest of the movie.
Well, I think that we're gonna cover that after this one scene where they finally board their ship and they're gonna make their way to this kingdom. They're on the high seas and I guess Vikings are really good at sailing.
Yeah.
Much better than the captain of the Andrea Gale, I'll put it that way.
Their beards were all natural. naturally colored.
Like piss.
And full, too.
Like piss.
Yeah, you don't argue with those beards. They can, you got beards like that, you can definitely steer a ship the right way.
How did you guys think the ocean compared to the ocean in Perfect Storm? Just as stormy?
Stormier.
Not as stormy.
I thought the water seemed
stormy.
Looked so fake.
They did.
And boring.
Yeah, they did.
And like, they didn't have any like sound effects or anything to make it sound like they were in the storm. It was so boring.
There's very little effort put into that.
And the guys are like sleeping on the ship and it was crappy.
And also like, I didn't see the horses on the ship.
Yeah, how did they get their horses back over
there? Then all of a sudden they had the horses again when they got off the ship. Where were the horses?
They were below the deck. Okay, so they make their way, I guess, to this other, whatever, this other land that King Beowulf is at. And so their horses get off the ship, they make their way over the land, and each night they sit down to eat and sleep and tell stories around a fire. And I thought that this scene where Antonio Banderas gradually learns their language by listening to them speak and tell stories around the fire was like a pretty good way to transition into us understanding everybody that's speaking in one unified language. And I think it was a clever way to get around having to subtitle different characters in this movie.
I thought this was an extremely economical way to shift the movie into English.
Right.
But it was also extremely silly, I thought.
The guy specializes in like linguistics, so it kind of is logical.
But that's, how could you possibly just listen to people talk in another language?
Especially such an ancient language.
Kevin, learn to listen.
You could pick up words like fire, maybe, because like they'd all be saying like, start a fire, like that kind of thing you could pick up. But he picked up every single word that they were using somehow. He knew what mother was. How would he have any way of knowing which word they were saying was mother? There's no context for it.
Well, the guy did make the hand sign that of a woman giving birth. So he goes, oh! While you're saying the word, so.
I feel like they just should have had them all speaking English to begin with.
Hmm.
If they're going to do it this way.
Listen, Kevin, learn to listen. Listen to learn.
Wow.
More you know.
Thanks. Yeah.
Well, this is the big fish out of water story, right? So they got to show that he's different than the other guys. But it's just so silly how he learns to speak this ancient language that's built on like runes and all these symbols over the course of like a meal, right? They're like, they're having dinner, and at the end of the meal, he's mastered the language.
I think it's over the course of like three or four different nights.
No, absolutely not. It's one continuous stretch. When the camera fades to black, it's cutting forward like 10 minutes each time.
Okay, well, they continue on this journey. They have like these stupid, whatever, jokes about Antonio Banderas' really crappy dog horse. His horse is a lot smaller than their horses, and therefore he's less manly. But he shows you that it's not the size of your horse that matters, it's how you use it.
That's a lesson for all of us, right, Kevin?
Absolutely.
Right, Kevin?
Right, Kevin?
Kevin?
Rachel.
Kevin?
Kevin?
Right. Kevin?
Yep.
You know what he's talking about, right, Kevin?
I'm actually unfamiliar with it.
Yeah, but you would understand what he's talking about.
Kevin? How would I know? What am I implying?
So yeah, Antonio, he puts on a little equestrian exercise for us.
Yeah, it did. I felt like I was at the Kentucky Derby. Like, what's going on here?
Don't do that at the Kentucky Derby.
Yes, they do.
Okay, yeah, so he was
jumping over steeplechases.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was putting on like a impromptu hunter equestrian exercise.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know about you guys, but that is like impossibly difficult to get your horse to do that correctly. And if you mess up, you like die.
Yeah, you like break your neck. Those
you
people
like break your
fall
ne-
off their horses and kill themselves.
Christopher Reeve.
Yeah.
Broke his neck.
If Christopher Reeve can't do it, then Antonio, he's got no chance.
Be that as it may, he shows them, hey, I can use my horse real well. I'm a real man. And they're all like, ha, 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 we're happy Vikings. You did it.
Hey,
let's
correct
go.
Me if I'm wrong, but...
These Vikings should be smacking them around and beating them up, right? That's how Vikings are.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but did Antonio Banderas jump his horse over another horse?
Yes, he did.
Yes.
How did that happen?
With someone on it.
Yeah.
The horse jumped 13 feet in the air? You cleared it?
Is that possible?
No. Maybe
if
the horse jumped on a trampoline or something.
Yeah, like House of the Dead. He had a trampoline there.
Okay, so they make their way to the Viking King's encampment, town, hamlet, village.
Did you like that when they were in the fog and they couldn't see? They didn't have any radar, so they did a little battleship action of their own, shooting missiles in every which way.
Yelling for Odin.
Yeah.
That was awesome. They make it to, the king's stronghold, and he's like, hey guys, we're getting slaughtered by these demon things. And everybody around here, we haven't had contact with them for like years.
Just like in Beowulf, Kevin, the king's people are besieged by a monster, Grendel, if you will. They're all in the great hall, if you will.
The Grundle.
They arrive at the castle of the king or whatever, and the king tells them what's going on. And that night or that day, whatever, Antonio Banderas is looking out into the wilderness and he sees a little figure, something gleaming in his eye. You can see it in Antonio Banderas' face. He gets a hungry look in his eye.
He starts drooling.
Yeah. And he runs. He takes his horse. His horse jumps 60,000 feet into the air, lands on the ground, and what should he find but a nude, prepubescent, prenatal boy.
I think he wasn't nude.
Covered in blood. Yeah, he was nude.
Yeah, he was naked.
He was?
Yeah.
I thought he was wearing like drab clothes.
Blood.
Oh. And he's like, boy. Where'd you come from and where are the rest of them? He's like, someone who knows where this kid came from, talk to him. This woman comes running down. Oh, he's from this whatever encampment outside
of. Who cares?
No, keep going. Okay, so they go follow where this boy came from, and they find a group of people completely slaughtered and partially consumed.
Cannibals.
Eaters of the dead, Alfred Packer's ancestors.
Yeah, we've been here before, okay. In musical format.
They find a token left by these quote-unquote eaters of the dead.
Kevin, did you recognize this statuette?
No.
Us art majors here were laughing and laughing when we saw this.
So infuriating to see them use this thing because it's just stupid. It's silly. They have the Venus of Willendorf as the statue.
That exact thing is an actual statue.
Okay.
Ancient. It's like one of the first statues
ever.
It's
a statue that's from 25 to 24,000 BC. We're in 992 AD. Like, what?
It's a fertility goddess.
Yeah, it's a fertility. Like, and that statue was found in like Austria.
Martin, she had a banging bod, eh? Slamming.
Slamming, bro.
So fertile.
Ancient chubby chasers.
All right, so they're all sleeping in the hall of the king, and all the monsters, they break in and they start fighting them. Kevin, what'd you think of this big action-packed battle?
I've actually liked it. The action itself wasn't all that great. I mean, there's a lot of sword fighting and stuff. That was okay. But it was pretty cool how after all of the demons or whatever these things are, when they left, not only did they take the heads of the people they killed, but they also took their own dead with them. So there's no trace of them even left. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I like that too.
Did you guys notice that Antonio Banderas was tossed by one of their fighters, like a little kid, was like thrown through the air?
Yeah, well, he's very small compared to everyone else in this movie, right? Even the Nordic women are bigger than him.
Good point.
So he's just a little tiny man.
He's a little guy.
I found that this fight scene was really dark and there was a lot of movement around on the screen, so I found it a little confusing.
Yeah, me too.
This whole movie is dark.
Dark, twisted, sick.
But I think that's part of it, right? Like, we're not supposed to know what these things are. It's supposed to be a secret still.
Should we discuss how we saw this film?
We can.
Maybe. I don't know. Should we leave any incriminating evidence?
Meh. Whatever.
We can talk about it. They never prove anything.
Let's just say that in the true Viking spirit,
We raped and pillaged the internet.
In order to see this film. So the quality
is...
wasn't at the bar.
It was questionable at times.
Okay, so this siege goes down. They're like, hey, listen, we got to like set up defenses around your freaking town because these things are going to come back again and they're going to kill everybody. So they set out to start digging a trench, putting up some spikes, and there's some internal conflict politically in this town. So
I did not understand what was going on at all.
Nope. This is
not a bit.
This is unnecessary in this movie, right?
Like, he's like, we have to make an example out of them. Like, what? What's going on here? Can you honestly explain to me what was going on? I felt like I could have just rewound the movie.
The king's son
but
was,
I didn't want to.
The king's son was threatened by the other head of like
Beowulf.
Yeah, he was threatened by Beowulf and his men that he might succeed him as king. So he's putting in his father's head like the idea that they might be trying to like betray them or kill them or whatever.
Does it even matter?
It doesn't. No, I'm saying it's unnecessary. Well,
besides, like, even what if those guys did? They were like the best of the best.
They're
the A team.
Nothing could bring.
If they wanted to take over, they could take over. Who's going to stop them?
They're there to help.
Yeah, they're the good guys.
Well, what do you guys think about Antonio Banderas getting cow urine on his face? Big fan?
I thought that was pretty good.
I'd like to see it in more of his movies.
What did Not you guys, enough cow urine in films.
What did you guys think of this giant blonde Viking guy attacking this other redhead guy that was like an extra 4 feet taller than him?
Well, yeah, so our ragtag team of Vikings, they decide that because the king is being told that they're going to possibly overthrow him, that they should then challenge one of the local guys? Doesn't that seem counterintuitive? Doesn't that seem like you're an aggressor?
No, he was challenging one of like the princes or like the king's son's men who was like in allegiance to him to show that, hey, Ronti.
That was the point of that?
I guess.
Yeah, they're talking about like deception and like doing all these tricks and stuff. At the end of the day, it doesn't mean anything, right?
Yeah, so this one of the smaller Vikings from our team, he throws some mud on, like, the biggest guy out there. They get into this fight.
Is he smaller? Because, like, in comparison to Antonio Banderas, I feel like that guy is, like, a foot taller than him.
Well, that's because Antonio Banderas is 3 feet shorter than everyone else around.
Yeah,
well, he weighs about, what, like, 110 in this movie?
Oh, man.
So these two guys get into a David and Goliath fight. The big guy is really pushing around the little guy. And then at the last minute, when the big guy goes in for the death blow, little guy pulls a spin move on him and chops his head right off. I kind of like this whole scene. It's completely pointless, but it was one of the more entertaining scenes in this whole movie.
You know, I can agree with that.
And I was engaged the whole time. And when it was over, I was like, hey, he got him. They fooled me. I thought he was getting his butt kicked.
Thought it was fun.
Yeah, and like Beowulf was like, well, now they're going to have to be on their toes because they don't know what to expect from us. Blah, 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 blah.
It didn't make sense, but I was... It didn't make any sense, but I was like, that's true. True.
It just seems counterintuitive to me.
I was like, that's true. They got to be on their toes now.
They were already on their toes.
Yeah, well, now they're really on their toes.
So do you think this political intrigue subplot is left over from the first draft of this movie?
It's got to be, right? Yeah.
It's great to know that little piece of this history of this movie, right? That it was originally one thing, that it was a piece of garbage, and they had to like reshoot everything.
Yeah, it's also interesting that Crichton himself took over as director.
Yeah.
Because I would say that I really felt like I was put in a place, like they transported me to this time and place very well. It was just kind of the execution of the story along the way that kind of fell apart for me. But as far as like an author, I mean, he's very good as an author of putting you in a certain time and place with his writing. And I think that happened in this movie too. It's everything else that could use some work.
The way they filmed this, at least filmed the setting and the props and costumes, and it was really well done. And I think that, I mean, the location they filmed it in, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It really does take you there.
All right, so Antonio Banderas, he has a little training montage, kind of, sort of, not really. They're building a fence.
He hits a fence with a sword.
Yeah, that's his training. And they gave him a broadsword, but it was too heavy for him to use. So he takes the broadsword and he goes to a blacksmith and he fashions himself a good old-fashioned scimitar. Getting me pumped for this?
Yeah, all of a sudden he became Zorro, finally. I was waiting all movie for Zorro to show up.
Yeah, so now that Antonio Banderas has the Prince of Persia sword, he's able to fight with the rest of the guys. Luckily for him, he got that sword made just in time because in the next scene, fog descends.
The fireworks.
Yeah, the fireworm.
Do I eat a worm? Yeah, they were talking about this fireworm like it was a dragon. I was actually kind of hoping a dragon would show up. Spice it up a little bit.
Some rain of fire action?
Dragonheart, yeah.
Yeah, well, unfortunately.
What's the fireworm?
It's a bunch of guys on horseback with torches. It's so stupid. I thought that, maybe we could get some Sean Connery action flying in as a dragon.
The fireworm shows up. It's 10 trillion soldiers with...
They're all wearing bearskin.
Let's say you guys had to fight in this battle. I would run away. Like, I would be an ultimate coward. I'm not fighting these things.
The ultimate coward. Not only are you running away, but you're making sure, like, everyone else dies, too.
You're, like, killing women and children to get out of there.
Get out of my way!
Like he steps on a kid's head, kills him on the way out.
I knock over like carriages and like barrels so like other people can't escape.
There's a lot of stuff happening. It's very dark and it's very hard to tell what's happening.
There's a lot of movement.
But there's
the camera's cutting in and out. I have no idea what's happening. It just looks muddy.
I think I saw Antonio Banderas impale a horse. That happened, right?
I don't think so.
No.
He impaled a horse.
Did he?
He had a giant stick in his hand, and he held it up, and a horse ran into it, and he impaled
All
it.
I remember is that he killed one of the eaters of the dead, knocked his stupid bear mask off, and was like, they're men. He said it like 40,000 times. They're men. And just like started going crazy, killing all of them, and they're like, stop, little brother. There will be more of these men.
So did he become an expert swordsman because he's been hanging out with the Vikings? Or was he always an expert swordsman?
He was always an expert swordsman.
No, he was a warrior poet, remember?
Yeah, you're right.
He was always an expert swordsman because they had that one scene where once he got his sword shaped down into a scimitar, he started doing like tricks with it and stupid tricks and like put the sword up to the one guy's throat and he's like, when you're dead, can I give that to my little girl?
Yeah, they started laughing at him.
Yeah, I think he just needed a lighter sword. The other thing was too heavy for him, so he couldn't do all those fancy tricks.
Okay.
I like the answer that the Vikings gave him when he's like, I can't lift it up. They're like, get stronger.
Good point.
It's a good argument.
I think he should have.
Do you think ball busting dates back to the dawn of time? Have people always been busting each other's balls?
Of course.
Right? From day one, right? Even like caveman times?
Oh, yeah.
Busting balls from the start.
Since there's been balls to bust, balls have been busted. This raid goes on for a long enough period of time, and then for some unknown reason, I guess once the fog lifts, they have to leave.
What
is happening? Why do they have to attack with the fog?
Someone blew a conch shell from the distance.
Yeah, it was.
Are they like mermen?
No, they're blowing the ram's horn. That's what that is, right? That's the ram's horn?
I have no idea. No clue.
Yeah, well, whatever. The point is that they were signaled to head back to their encampment and I guess leave their town, the town that they attacked, in ruin. It's everything's on fire. I guess it kind of makes sense because they're just gonna like leave them or whoever has survived to like try and like salvage whatever they can, but
they just come back later, right?
Yeah, like that's a big morale buster, right?
Isn't the point of them attacking to get food? They're kind of cannibals, right? They didn't really accomplish that. They didn't really pick up any dead bodies, right?
Are they ceremonial cannibals or are they like literally eating people for food?
I'm gonna go that they're eating people for food.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah?
Sure.
Because like they had...
Once you taste the sweet taste of human flesh, you can't eat anything else.
You heard that guy. I saw the devil.
I'm gonna say that there's some ceremonial religious aspect to them eating people, which is why they have it set up down in the cave that freaking... It's beneath the statue.
If the evergreen old boy and Alfred Pack or have taught me anything in life, it's... Once you start eating humans, you're not going to go back.
All right, well, the group is like, look, we got to bring the fight to them, so...
They go to this film's second wise crazy old woman, because the first one in the beginning wasn't enough. We needed a second crazy old woman. And you know what? Come to think of it, I'm glad they changed it from it being an old woman at the end of the movie as the last boss, because then we would have three
the last
crazy
boss.
Old women in this movie. That's what it was, right? Come on.
Did she go and say, this is my final form?
I want to say she was a sub-boss.
Yeah, she was just a mini-boss?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the last guy, he's the boss.
Yeah.
Okay, so they go to this woman. She's like, you gotta get the mother. Get the root.
Yeah, kill the mother.
How does she know this?
Because she's a wise old lady. She's crazy.
She's an oracle.
Is she?
No, I think she's just old, crazy.
Well, somehow she knows, like, a lot about these people. So she gives them that advice, and they're like, all right, let's do it, guys. 13 warriors, and they all put their hands in.
Yeah, high five.
And they head on out.
They decide that these guys, they want to be bears. So where do you fight a bear? In a cave. So they go to the nearest cave. Lo and behold, there's this huge army of cannibals down there hanging around, just having a blast. So they do a little Metal Gear Solid tactical stealth espionage action, and they're crawling around in the cave and all this stuff. Were you excited during this?
There's at most, what, 7 or 8 of them?
Yeah.
There's 10 trillion of these cannibals living in these cave systems.
That's why they're doing the tactical espionage action, Kevin.
What chance do they have, though? At some point, someone's gonna spot them.
They have to strike at the root.
Get the mother.
Get the mother.
They're never getting out of there.
Didn't you listen
never
to the oracle?
Out of there.
Never give up, never surrender.
Once again, it's very dark. I don't know exactly what's happening here, but the one guy, he goes off, he finds the mother. She's a young woman.
Yeah, smoking hot babe.
Wouldn't go that far.
Yeah, her teeth pretty gross.
She had a poison nail thing.
She had a velociraptor nail in her hand.
Michael Crichton loves his velociraptor
which
nails.
She dipped in some black goo, which I guess was poison. And
I thought it was like ink.
It's the Viking
henna. They're henna tattoos.
It's the big Viking dude versus little girl.
Yeah, seriously. So
it's not only that, but she's covered in snakes. That's got to inhibit you from moving around.
That's true.
It's not okay for the Vikings to murder an old lady, but it's okay for them to murder a young woman.
I guess so.
She was hissing like an animal, though.
I was seriously expecting the mother to look like the Venus of Willendorf, like to be pregnant and to be giving birth.
Oh, like a queen ant?
Yeah,
something?
Exactly.
You wanted her to be giving birth as they attacked her?
Yes. I really thought it was going to be like a queen ant, like a queen bee kind of thing.
She's human, though. How could that possibly be happening?
Yeah,
so what?
Happening.
So what? They're in a cave. Anything goes.
I've never heard that argument before. They're in a cave. Anything goes.
Anything goes.
Think about it.
Remind me to never go in a cave with you.
Yeah, Kevin. You're not coming out.
What happens in the cave stays in the cave. He attacks this woman, and there is a lot of roots in this part of the cave. They're like a million feet below ground. What tree is... How are roots from a tree that's like 1,000 feet above them getting down into this stupid little chamber? And then why are they hanging heads in it? Decoration?
Yeah.
But then why are all the...
What else would you do with your head? Put him in a duffel bag?
Only 8, though. Can fit in mine.
All right, well, she scratches his shoulder, and he's like,
yeah. It was almost sensual.
Yeah, it was like bizarre. So he's like,
a nice caress.
And he's like, you stupid. And he just chops her head off, and it comes clean off.
Yeah, I didn't even care. They jumped into the river, and they swam away, and they got away. It's not a big deal. But our boy Beowulf, he was getting pretty sick. He's poisoned.
Yeah, she poisoned him with GHB or something.
At this point, the movie's over, right? They killed the queen.
I thought it was over.
They killed the queen bee, but then they're
you
like,
"You thought wrong."
Yeah, they're like, "Uh oh, the head boss guy, he's gonna want to get revenge on you." Oh, I looked at
right
the time.
Right when you thought this movie was over, his boss meter went all the way at the top of the screen. He shows up.
I was like, "Wait a minute! There's only 10 minutes left in this movie. How are they gonna have a big final protracted battle?" I honestly thought that they were gonna end it on a cliffhanger, and then we'd have to come back to the 14th. Warrior.
That would have been amazing. I almost wish that happened now.
No, but instead we get this pointless thing where the last boss shows up and they have this super slow-mo battle against this guy. And
the guy who was poisoned comes out and it's the guy's poisoned versus the head guy. What chance would he have?
He's dying.
At what, 10%? His life meter's at 10%.
Yeah, well, Beowulf kills man, bear, pig, and...
The end. Game over.
The end, yeah. That's...
The credits roll. Game over.
Yeah, and Antonio Banderas heads back to Persia.
Yeah, he goes home. Okay, well, that's pretty much it. That's the 13th Warrior. Let's find out what the real critics have to say about this movie. With a budget set to be more than $100 million, it displays a lot of cash on the screen, but little thought. Roger Ebert, Chicago Sun-Times. The 13th Warrior seems like a made-for-TV warrior movie without enough money to get really epic. Desson Thomas, Washington Post. And finally, a mud-stained, blood-soaked, and completely useless movie. Sean Means, Film.com. Okay, guys, this movie currently holds a 33% on Rotten Tomatoes, but is it really that?
33% I think is pretty low. I think 60%, 55-60% is probably more accurate. I mean... I've seen some terrible movies for this show, and this had me relatively interested the majority of the time. It drags a little bit at the end. I think it maybe goes 15 minutes, 20 minutes too long. Other than that, it was relatively entertaining. It wasn't great, but it wasn't terrible. So the sets and the costumes and the way that it looked, I thought was really well done. It was a very cool looking movie, not as far as direction goes, but as far as setting goes. So yeah, it was all right. I'm gonna give it a 3 out of 5.
I'm gonna give this movie a 2 out of 5. I agree. I think this movie looked very good. The costumes, the sets, everything. I just didn't care about anything that was happening on the screen, about any of the characters. I especially didn't care about Antonio Banderas. He was the worst character in this whole movie. I don't know. I think it would have been a lot more interesting just to follow the Vikings and do more Viking stuff. Maybe I was hoping that's what we were going to get here, but I just really didn't care. I found myself really disinterested, but like I said, it did do a really good job of transporting me to a time and place, so that's why I'll let to get the 2.
I am in complete agreement with Kevin. I'm going to give this movie a 2 out of 5. First off, I went into this movie with a bias. I just don't like this time period and I don't like these kind of movies, and I wrap it up with the same reason why I don't like Lord of the Rings. Same kind of thing. Like these kind of movies where people are walking around and it's medieval-esque and stuff. I just don't care. Especially when they went into that cave at the end. I was like, oh God, of course. Of course. A cave. I just don't like this kind of stuff.
It was either going to be a cave or a forest.
Yeah, one or the other. Right? We got a little bit of a forest, but not enough to whet my appetite. But yeah, I just don't like these kind of movies right off the bat. But that kind of thing can be overcome if the story's interesting, if the plot is interesting, if the characters are interesting. But this movie really failed to have me connect to it on any level. I found this movie to be a chore to sit through. I kept constantly checking the time over and over and over again. Like, it's like, oh my God, is an hour left in this? Like, that's how early it was when I started checking. Like, this movie just failed to connect with me on any level. I didn't like it at all. So yeah, I'm gonna go with a 2 out of 5. I did like some of the Vikings. You're correct. Like, some of them were fun and playful characters. I didn't care about Antonio Banderas at all. We didn't get to learn about any of these people, who they were, what they were all about at all. But then again, there's 13 of them. There wouldn't be enough screen time to do it. So I don't know. Could at least have learned more about Antonio, but oh well. We're too busy watching him jump around on a horse to learn who he is as a person. Oh well. Better luck next time, eh?
Guess so.
Okay, let's read some listener mail.
Should we take this opportunity to congratulate Super Bowl champions? The San Francisco 49ers. The Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, 49ers did it. All right.
Go team.
Yeah, Baltimore Ravens. Team of destiny.
Go team. Okay, Gunny writes in and says, he wants to talk about the 13th Warrior. I'd like to point out something about this movie. In addition to all the armor from different locations and historical periods that Vikings would not have worn, the Wendel are wearing something unrealistic too. A single brown bear has a normal range of at least 10 square miles. To get all of the full bear skins the bad guys are wearing, they would have to have had to render the brown bear totally extinct in Europe.
I actually thought about that at one point. I was like,
I actually thought about that too.
All these bear skins.
I did. I actually thought about that. I was like, how did they? They must have killed thousands of brown bears. And like, I mean, there's just not that many brown bears.
Okay, Jasu writes in, and forgive me if I'm mispronouncing your name, but that's how Kevin told me I should say it.
Wow, passing the buck. All right.
He writes in and he says, as a former United States Navy sailor, the only thing I enjoyed about the movie Battleship was the scene where they were relighting the boilers on the USS Missouri. I had flashbacks to my days as a fresh, naive machinist mate in the 105 degree engine room, aka hell, maintaining the steam man systems that keep my ship in the fight. That being said, I laugh at the scene also because I know there's no way that the Mighty Mo can bring up plant systems back online in 4 hours. It takes nearly 6 hours just to reach the proper steam pressure, not to mention the process of bringing up boilers that haven't been online in more than 2 decades. However, the ship is also on a list of possible naval vessels that, if ever the US were short on ships in the fleet, they would recommission that ship and 3 other battleships. I have seen that ship before on my many tours and enjoyed the rich history that came with it. I take pride knowing that I was part of a military service that produced such an astounding war machine. But this movie just didn't do right by the ship and those who served on her.
True patriot.
You guys were...
Where does he stand on down periscope? That's what I want to know.
Or McHale's Navy?
Yeah.
How does he feel about in the Army now?
Kelsey Grammer or...
I'm a down periscope man.
Same here.
Tom Arnold?
What about Sergeant Payne? How do you feel about that?
Major Payne.
Oh, Major Payne. Colonel Payne. Okay, so...
You know, it's funny because you two were harping on about the steam engines when we did the original review, and I cut that so fast.
You did?
Did not believe. Yeah.
Full disclaimer. I didn't listen to the last week's episode yet.
There you go.
Yeah, I was wondering why you cut that out. I mean, I kind of understood why you did it.
What, 20 minutes straight of you talking about steam engines? You think people would hear about it?
That's hard-hitting stuff, man.
Dude, everyone loves steam engines.
Yeah, Steamboat Willie.
All of our steampunk fans want to know all about steam engines.
Okay, Elena writes in and says, hey guys, I realize that your next episode is coming out tomorrow, and so maybe you might not read this message in time for this week's episode, but maybe for next week. I also apologize because this will be a rather long message. I just found you guys while paradoxically perusing for peculiar, peppy, and pathetic podcasts on Saturday. I am now writing this on Monday and have listened to almost all your podcasts already. I am unlike most of your demographic in the fact that I am a 15-year-old girl. Mark.
All right.
I also am personally unable to sponsor episodes, so I figured that I could contribute what I could as a future art major can. I picture Joel has dark brown hair with blue eyes, who is always that annoying kid you never wanted to be partners with in school, but also always wanted to sit next to because he makes amazing one-liners and would always hit you best of ways. Overall, 4 beefs out of 5. Martin is, by the way, this whole time, Martin and Kevin are giving you the thumbs down on everything that's positive and thumbs up on all the negatives. Martin is one of those guys who you never expected to be hot, but then at your high school reunion were totally blown away by his brown hair and brown eyes. He somehow makes the basic combination attractive and would make an excellent boyfriend simply because in my mind, he's a chef. Martin eats frozen pizzas every night.
Yep.
That's a fact.
Chef Martin.
Overall.
Shay Martin.
Overall, 4.5 out of 5 beefs. But he has the potential to go through a midlife crisis in which he starts to drive a moped and has 5 beefs.
Wow, I get an extra half beef for driving a moped?
I thought you'd lose that.
Yeah, I thought I would lose like 3 beefs.
I actually read this wrong. I read the wrong line, but I'm going to keep it because that sounds better. Kevin lives up to his namesake of bacon by constantly smelling like it. You smell like Kevin Bacon.
Oh, I thought that she meant that he just smells like bacon.
I think we all smell like bacon right now.
We had some delicious bacon jerky. You know, I don't think we discussed this on the podcast, Kevin, but what have we been eating before every single episode for the past like 8 months?
Jerky.
We've been eating beef jerky like every single show. Kevin's the jerky maven. He always supplies.
Look, I mean, the only way to get us, you know, energized and ready to go for this is to have some hot beef injection right before.
Oh, so true. Today you brought some bacon flavored jerky that was to die for.
Yeah.
That's a fact. Like, I would kill someone for it.
Because Kevin is already married, he drops to a 3 out of 5 beefs.
Oh.
However, he has that boyish charm that makes you want to hug him whenever he breaks out in his signature cackle. Thank you so much for the laughs as I walk home through the docks. What do you think of that?
Sounds like a scary walk home.
For a 15-year-old girl?
Yeah. Wow, that's not good. Stop it walking home by the docks.
That sounds like a scary walk home for a 30-year-old man.
Okay, Nick writes in and says, good evening, gentlemen. I just finished listening to your latest podcast, Battleship, which I'm a fan of, and I watch it for comedy. In this movie, at one point, you quickly discuss flying alien scenes in movies. So the question I have for you is this. Which is your favorite alien flying scene from a movie? A, alien flying in Buckaroo Banzai, can be shared with John Lithgow. B, alien flying in Independence Day. C, alien flying underwater in The Abyss. And D, Martin, the Cylon Raider Scar from Battlestar Galactica. This is
one of my favorite episodes.
This is my favorite and favorite concept of an alien ship. Or E, Kevin, Tom Cruise in Top Gun. Thanks for all you guys do and keep up the great work.
Is he insinuating that Tom Cruise is infected with alien thetans?
Perhaps.
And flying is
flying. Wow, that'd be quite the coup if they got to Tom Cruise since he's their number one enemy.
I know.
Well, let's say, so what's your favorite alien flying scene in a film?
E.
What?
E.
Top Gun?
I'm gonna say the alien ship from The Abyss. I thought that was awesome.
I go to Independence Day. They had some pretty cool stuff going on. The little ships flying around.
But my secret answer is Scar from Battleship Galactica.
Battleship?
Yeah, I'm gonna keep that. Battleship Galactica. Yeah, okay. It's a combination of the two. No, from Battlestar Galactica.
And finally, Matt writes in and says, hey guys, this is my first time writing in. First of all, I just gotta say I love the podcast. Keep up the great work. Second of all, did you know that one of your running gags was once a mental illness? It's true. It's called Zero Stroke. After World War I, the economy in Germany was so bad that inflation caused prices for basic goods to be numbered in the millions. People had to deal with so many zeros it developed zero stroke, an illness that causes people to compulsively write zeros on everything. But the other effect was that anytime someone would try to describe a number or quantity, it would come out exaggeratedly high. The article that I read about this specifically mentioned people saying that they were 40 million years old or had 3 billion kids. Just saying, you guys might want to head to your nearest psychologist before it gets any worse.
Nah, I'm gonna keep it going.
Yeah, all three of us have an ingrained, terrifying fear of inflation. That's why we do it.
Darwinian capitalism.
I am against a centralized banking cartel.
Follow the money, Kevin.
Yeah.
Always. Follow the money. Okay, thanks for the emails, guys. If you want to contact us, you can reach us at yeahitsthatbad@gmail.com. Okay, now it's time to announce next week's movie. And next week's movie is a movie called Gothic. Have either of you ever heard of this?
I've never heard of it.
I've heard of Gothica.
No, it's not that. It's just Gothic.
Never heard of it.
Okay, tune in next week and we'll be watching Gothic. Okay, thanks for listening to the show. If you like what you've heard, please consider subscribing. subscribing. We have a new episode every Tuesday. Please leave us a positive review on iTunes. Those 5-star reviews really do help with the show. Please help spread the word of the show to all your friends by liking us on Facebook, facebook.com/yeahitsthatbad. You can follow the show on Twitter @yeahitsbad. You can follow Martin @yeahitsmartin. You can follow Kevin @yeahitskevin. And you can listen to this show on all your mobile devices via Stitcher. You can get that at stitcher.com. Once again, thanks for listening to the show. See you next time.
Yeah.
It's all out. If that's moving up, then I'm moving out.
I'm moving out. Actually, I heard it the other day.
Okay, so...
Heart attack, yak, you ought to know. Did he actually write that on a piece of paper, like when he wrote the lyrics?
Heart attack, yak.
He wrote that down.
What was that noise?
Ready? Sounds like a fart, right?
I'm very impressed.
Are you farting on demand?
Cablevision.
Cablevision.
We should buy it on my remote.
Fart.
No matter where he is in the world.
You know he's going for some big job interview. Oh, it's 9:45. Mark's probably in there right now.
Yeah, I pull out the turbo control where I just turn it on and walk away.
Mad cats.
Yeah.
Fart controller.
Hey, it could happen.
Network!
Yeah.